The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Basscat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody, and welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, I'm kind of bummed out, man. It's back to school day.
Oh, I thought it was. Yeah, had the day off yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was also a day off from live coverage after the FLW Tour on Lake Toho and the Elite Series on the St. John's River concluded on Sunday. Yesterday, what did we do with ourselves? There was no live streaming of professional bass fishing coverage, but fear not, Mark, for it is back and will be back at 10 a.m. Central Time on MajorLeagueFishing.com with the first group on Lake Conroe. They are already out on the water right now plying the muddy waters for Lunker largemouth and fish that weigh more than 1 pound.
Yeah, they're kind of catching a few.
Yeah, they're definitely catching a few. It's an interesting fishery. I've been looking forward to this one since they announced it. Obviously, we've seen what Brent Ayler, Steve Kennedy, and Jordan Lee have been able to do as far as big fish on Lake Conroe. They're definitely in there. If you follow the Lake Conroe bass, it often takes three fish for anywhere from 18 to 25 pounds to win their weeknight jackpot. And with the 16-inch limit, there's a lot of pound and a half to 2.5 pounders that don't make that 16-inch cut, but do this week. So,
yeah,
and I will be watching.
All right. We'll check it out. Good show today. We're going to have Buddy Gross on, have him on live via the phone, unable to do Skype. He's actually doing some promo on a body of water. I'm not sure where he's at. So he said the cell service might be a little sketchy, but we tested it yesterday. Should be good to go.
Based on the side of his boat, I would imagine it might be Chickamauga.
I don't know where it was. I'm not really sure. A couple of housekeeping items here real quick, Matthew. I received a tremendous amount of feedback. Not millions, but a pretty good number of people took the time to email me and share their thoughts with what we discussed yesterday. And I just want to say thanks, man. That's freaking awesome. I am thoroughly, thoroughly pleased and cannot be happier and just so thankful that people cared enough to take the time out to at least voice their opinion. Now, did everybody agree with me? No, there's a couple of people that didn't agree, and that's fine. And you know what? If you don't agree, tell me. Tell me. That's the beauty of the show. So I want to say thank you to all the people out there that voiced their thoughts about what we did on the show yesterday. And we don't have that type of show that often.
I will say you elicit a much stronger reaction than I do based on the percentage of emails and comments directed in your way, either strongly supporting or vehemently disagreeing with you.
You kind of ride the fence, though.
But I have my opinions.
Fence rider,
no,
man.
I have my opinions. Someone has to bring some level-headedness to the show every once in a while.
It's funny, on the instant feedback right now, it just showed up. Dennis in Illinois, he mentioned something that I was actually going to discuss based upon the sources that we have. And obviously today we want to focus on Buddy Gross. We're going to get to him here in about 10 minutes. But an interesting thing went down on Sunday during a MLF meeting that I guess obviously took place down at Conroe, that Mike Iaconelli and Ish Monroe ended up being fined for their vulgar language used during the live feed on Major League Fishing.
I think this is a missed opportunity for a soap sponsorship, Mark.
He has a soap sponsorship.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He does. He just announced it this past week.
Just come out, clean the mouth out with the soap for a little bit, throw it out on the MLF website.
Now, what's the most famous, probably most recognizable scene in a movie where a little kid is eating soap?
That would have to be in the Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Where he's got the
soap. Do you remember what kind it was?
It was bar soap.
Yeah,
it was,
of course.
No, I don't. What was it?
I think it was lava.
Lavas. I do remember that.
It was gross, man. Gross. Did you ever have that? Did you ever have your mouth washed out with soap by your parents?
No.
That's kind of old school.
No. Yeah. I got.
I said damn for the first time. Oh, it was immediate trip to the bathroom.
The first time, I'll tell the story. Why not? The first time I said the forbidden F word that I think might have gotten Mike Iaconelli a little bit of a fine and ish. I was at Birchport Resort in Cachevaui, Ontario for our weekly or our yearly Canada trip. And there was another kid, I'll never forget it, his name was Marcel.
Yeah.
And we fished the docks together in between, you know, go out and catch a little pike off the docks. And he taught me the word. And he said, you should say that when you go back in the cabin. He was a couple years older than me. And I didn't know what it meant. So the resort owners were over for dinner. And I was playing the game Sorry. You remember that game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he won. So I thought it was an opportunity to use the new word that I had just learned. And I belted it out right in front of the resort owners and everything. I remember this.
My dad, how old were you?
I was probably 7 or 8.
Wow.
And I remember my dad and I had said a curse word before, and I didn't even know it was a curse word. I mean, I just thought it was a funny word.
Yeah.
My dad took me into the room. He said, hey, where'd you learn that? I said, Marcel taught it to me down at the dock. I didn't get to fish with Marcel the rest of the week off the dock.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess going forward, there is going to be some type of rule in place where if you use a bad word or bad language during the live content, you will be fined. What that dollar amount is.
Where does that dollar amount go?
I don't know. All right. And you brought up a good point about, you know, this could turn into a massive positive to where you take all the fines from whatever happens. And then you, I'm not going to say you put it in a jar, but what you do, you put it in an account.
Yeah.
Then at the end of the year, you donate it to a charity of your choice. And then
bad language for a good cause, the MLF.
That's it. All right. And then MLF matches the contribution to whatever charity it is. And you take a bad thing and turn it into a good thing.
There you go.
So I like that a lot. I was perusing. Man, I was up late last night working on this massive, very in-depth plan on how to revise the basketball playoff system in Oklahoma. I'm actually doing a presentation on this, so been working on that. Anyway, for some reason, I got caught looking at, you know how on YouTube they have those side videos, so many. And,
oh, you went and down the YouTube wormhole.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, where you start like 3 clicks ago, you're like listening to like a Christmas song, and now you're watching like a crime documentary from the 60s.
But it was the first time that I saw it. Did you hear what Sergio Garcia did?
Oh, with the bunker.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you see that?
Yeah. He went nuts on it. He hit the ball out of it.
Absolutely crazy.
He lost it.
So there was quite the turmoil and follow-up and people were very, very opinionated on what should happen to him, and I haven't heard anything. And then the other thing was the chaos that was taking place out at Pebble Beach. Did you see some of that weather they were trying to play golf in?
No, I knew it was delayed.
Oh, my gosh. This is bad. Really, really, really bad. Hail. The entire green was white because of the hail.
That was the one Mickelson won.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good to see him win. But I thought about comparing what I did to the whole Sergio thing and how that thing just massively exploded. And I had no idea that he did it. But, yeah, there was quite the controversy on what the penalty should be on Sergio. And I don't know what they ended up doing. Do you know what they ended up doing?
No. I forgot to mention, I don't know if you saw on live, obviously you talk about the bowling comparisons, you have your professional bowling tour card, and when I was watching the Bass Live, and I had this on my notes from yesterday, didn't actually get to it, that I believe it was Greg DePalma who was on Bass Live, and if he wasn't a fisherman, he would be pursuing a career as a professional bowler, carries like a 220, 240 average.
Really?
Big time bowler. So we might want to get him on the show.
Huh. How'd you find that out?
It talked about it on Bass Live.
Huh. Okay. We need to do that. How much? 240?
That's what I think Zona said.
Are you kidding me?
I have just...
That had to be exaggeration.
I don't know. I'm the messenger. I could have been wrong on that. It could have been 220.
Wow. All right. Well,
I think
what else?
He's a Jersey guy. That's really big out on the East Coast.
Oh, it's huge.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Huge, so that huge, makes huge sense. Some of the vintage centers, you know, people used to call them bowling alleys. They're mm-hmm. actually bowling centers, exist on the East Coast around that area. All right, man. What else?
Not much. You know, I was doing my research on Buddy heading into this. Have not ever talked to him before, I don't think. You did, obviously, in setting up this interview.
Yeah.
But went back and was doing some research. He's been on a little bit of a roll. You go back to his first tour win when he was a rookie in 2016, and then he won a Coast on Seminole in 17, won the South Eastern Points Division in 17, and then won this tournament in 2019. So has amassed quite a winning record in not that long.
3 years?
Of fishing in 4 years.
4 years.
On the front. So he seems to be one of these specialty guys. Likes grass.
Yeah.
Likes ledges. I mean, his boat is wrapped in like Fish Lake Chickamauga, so that'll
yeah.
hair jig, swim bait, crank jig, that type of stuff. Yeah. So,
where's the next FLW stop at?
It is at Seminole,
huh?
In the very beginning of March, where he won the Costa Series in 2017. And then they go to Chickamauga.
Yeah.
So it is setting up to where it could be. I mean, he's going to be on the watch list at Seminole, obviously, and then one of the favorites at Chickamauga. And the other guy who would have been a favorite, a couple other guys who would have been a favorite there, are not fishing the FLW Tour this year. You know, Michael Neal.
Yeah.
One of Andy Morgan.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
He's got to be one of the front runners.
All right, real quick. Chris in New Hampshire. Yes, I did receive your email, and I greatly appreciate it. Very, very interesting statistical data that was sent my way by Chris in New Hampshire. So, I don't know, man. I'm excited to see what happens this week. A historic week. I know we use that term loosely, but seriously, this is going to be a week where we see what happens at Conroe, and at the same time, you have the Elite Series taking place on Lake Lanier. And it's a battle.
They're catching some big spotted bass, too, down there.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. Seen a lot of the photos. They look like 3.5, 4, 4.5 pounders. But you saw what Brad Hallman did there. He had 24-plus last year. It was a little bit later in the year. Those fish were probably a little bit more pre-spawned than they are now.
That's where he was paralleling the docks, right?
Yeah, he was catching them on the break walls, and then he also had some points. And then the last day, remember, he bailed on it. And he picked up the spinner bait and put like 13 pounds in the box, had a great call, and won that event. I think he led it wire to wire.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. We're going to take a break. Hopefully come back with Buddy Gross right here on a Tuesday. Everybody, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
The Heart of the Bass Cat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Bass Cat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Bass Cat. Feel the rush.
Some people have seen a green ghost. Green Ghost, the new rod from Duckett Fishing. $79. It's coming February 2019. Duckett Fishing, pro driven.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Pros depend on hydraulic jack plates to get the best out of their boats. Do what they do. Demand Atlas Performance. Atlas gets you from the bottom to the top in less than 8 seconds, even with the big four strokes. And when you gotta turn right around and get that heavy load back up in rough water, Atlas's innovative design and American-made components will get you there with confidence.
I'm at Depot. Just look for yourself. There's an Atlas jack plate on just about every professional's boat.
The Atlas Hydraulic Jack Plate. You can depend on it.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Duckett Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DuckettFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out.
Hey guys, Aaron Martins here. I'm gonna be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE x8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE x8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Avco has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's gonna stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's gonna keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from Avco.
We are back on a Tuesday. I believe this is show number 19, Matthew, of 2019. 18,
good.
19.
Pretty
I
good
don't
rate
know.
There, Mark.
Somebody on the instant feedback brought up a good point. We'll talk about it once we interview Buddy about what television fishing show got you into fishing. We'll get into that. Don't go there yet. All right, I like that question. That's a good topic. Now it is time to bring in our special guest. The man got it done on Lake Toho. Over 85 pounds over 4 days. And he's kind of the big fish guy.
Yeah, and now he's practicing on Seminole for the upcoming tour event. And I don't know why, because he clearly has those dialed in based on his past performance on Seminole. And then he goes to Chickamauga. It's pretty much a lock for 3 for 3, Mark.
Yeah, could be.
We're going to see back to back to back, and people will be like, Mark Rose, who? after the start of the season 3 years
ago. I don't
know.
We'll see. Buddy, you there, man?
Yes, sir, I am. How are y'all doing?
Oh, doing great, man. Thanks for taking time out. I know it's been kind of crazy, and yesterday I asked you when we were setting this call up about day 5. How cool was that doing day 5 yesterday?
It was awesome. Weather was great. It was not in a hurry. I was kind of a relaxed day of fishing. I kind of enjoyed it myself.
Do you like doing that, going back to where you had success at and kind of explaining what went down during the week?
I do. I enjoy trying to pass along what I have learned to somebody else. I have a daughter. She loves to fish, but I don't think she's gonna do it nowhere. You know, I don't think she's gonna pursue it like I did. So I got a lot of stuff to teach and to give to somebody. So I don't mind it at all.
Buddy, this is going to be kind of a cool tournament to watch after we get to see the show. We got to watch you live fishing. You did the day five once that comes out. But I like it because, you know, you did a pre-tournament interview with, I believe it was Kyle Wood, kind of leading into this thing after 2 days of practice and kind of broke down how things were going. But it sounded like even after just 2 days, you were pretty much dialed in to what was going on Toho.
Yeah, I think so. I had a really good practice. Fortunately, I had a little bit of time where I could go down before it went off limits and got to do a lot of the idling. The way I like to fish, I like to know what's there. I don't like to do a whole lot of just guessing and flying at the hip. I like to know kind of what I need to be doing. So I did a lot of idling, a lot of looking, marked a bunch of stuff. So it took 3 days to fish what I marked in a day and a half. And at the end of the 3 days of practice, I felt like I knew what I was going to do. Didn't know exactly where it was going to happen, but I just knew it was going to happen by the quality that I was catching. So it was a good practice.
It sounds like you got dialed into some very specific spots, like to those two grass clumps, and then on top of it, found a very specific way to catch them with, you know, bringing the bait into it instead of popping it out. I mean, how long did it take you to kind of evolve and develop to get that dialed in 100% and then track down John Cox, who had the 10-pound lead after day one? You just made up ground, took the lead on day three, and then ran away with it on the final day.
I just really and truly, I knew that if I had a good boat number, I needed to find some bed fish. So on the third day, for pretty much 2/3 of the day, I looked for bedding fish. So, and unfortunately, and it sounds like it's an unfortunate, I found a giant fish. I found a giant, like 10 plus. I thought she was 12, but she wound up weighing 10 and a half, and I can tell you how that happened because my buddy caught it when they watched it. First day, though, I stood in there and I hooked her. And she got off, and I didn't have her, like, I'm literally telling you, less than 2 seconds that I have her hooked, and she got off. I went back to her 6 times during the day and seen her one more time, and that was it. And the second day, I just decided I was going to go to her later in the day where I could see her, and I got in there, and a buddy of mine was close, and it wound up to be Jamie Horton. He caught her. She's 10 and a half. So, but once I give up on the bedding thing 45 minutes in, I went out to the grass line, and I started on the backside because it was – you had a grass line where I caught the fish was on the deep side of it. But if you went on the inside of it, it really was not much deeper, but the grass was more like a rug under the surface. And it was about 12 inches under the surface. And you'd have some areas that were dying off and leaving holes in the grass. And those holes were congregating the fish in practice. But we had a pretty good wind the first day. And the wind was blowing on the outside edge, so I didn't get bit on the front. So I made a straight beeline to the first place I could get through in a short place. Made a cast, caught one. Made a second cast, caught one. Third cast, caught one. And I pretty much started working off of that. Started circling it and made that my home. And that's how it happened.
One of the baits that you use, aside from a couple different swim jigs, which I thought it was interesting, the kind of meaty trailer, but you had that Scottsboro tackle swim bait in the 5 and 6 inch, correct?
Yep.
Dude,
yes, sir.
That is a meaty swim bait. There is some beef to that. I actually have a couple of those, and there's a lot of plastic there. Talk about how you kind of settled on that bait as opposed to any of the other options, because it was obviously the right one. And then also, it seemed like you had like kind of the flashy swimmer on the back. Do you think that made that flash made a big difference in getting the fish to commit?
I think it did. The flashy swimmer has just been something that I've kind of used. It's kind of been my staple. I use it on a lot of it. I use it a lot. I did it at Seminole on one here. I mean, it's just something that I've played with and kind of grew with. I mean, I like it. It just gives it an extra flash. I like it if it's got a little bit of a chop on the water more than I do if it's flat. But I did rig up a Scottsboro tackle without it, and I didn't get bit on it as much. But I have a lot of confidence in the flashy swimmer too, so it could have just been the confidence thing for me. But the meat of it is, it is a lot, but it's a hollow belly swim bait, so you can split it open in the bottom, and it makes it, you know, it's not much different from a fluke once you do it that way. And with that 8-aught beast hook in it, it you get a lot of bite in it. Fortunately, you know, the grass I was fishing was so green and crisp and not dying and not soft that I could leave the hook exposed a lot, and that way it made for an easier hook set. I guess that was one trick that a lot of people don't do. Everybody tries to bury their hook, and it's harder to get them in it. But I did leave mine exposed for the most part.
And then on the swim jig that you were throwing, you had a big trailer on that too, like a 4-inch swim bait on that trailer as well, right?
I did, and I just, you know, I hooked it real thin, so there wouldn't be a whole lot of meat on the top side.
That's
I went through a lot of them, by just kind of skin hooked it on the top side just for the action of it. But that 4-inch, I think, really matched the size bait they're feeding on better. And I could get more bites probably on the swim jig with a 4-inch. And it came to the grass really well. The half-ounce jig that I was throwing really run deeper than my swim bait. So it gave me 2 water column depths to kind of work with also.
Buddy, I know a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with how you got into this game and the success that you've had on the FLW Tour. How did you get into this game of professional fishing?
Well, I started out young as a kid. My parents always had me on the water somewhere. They always had a boat, whether it was a pleasure boat or a bass boat or a flat bottom. I remember my dad, and we didn't, when I was real little, we had 2 nickels rubbed together, but he had a CJ5 and a flat bottom, and he put it on top of that CJ5 and take me somewhere fishing usually every weekend. So I was very fortunate to be brought up around it, but I started tournament fishing at home with a childhood friend, you know, team partner fishing, and we had a lot of success. We won pretty much everything there was to win at home, and I always had to have a job. I worked, and I had an opportunity. I went to General Man's in a body shop for my in-laws, and I had an opportunity to go try to fish the coast just to see what would happen, and I had a good year, qualified my first year, and done some talking to my wife, so I'd like to try this one time to see what would happen. And we really didn't have the money to go, to be real honest with you, but all the friends and family and people around the house had, you know, had faith in me to do good. So a lot of my friends had businesses, and they just kind of chipped in a little bit of money here and there and said, we want you to try this. And wow. I did. Didn't have a lot of success in the beginning. I got my first check at Beaver, which is where the last place I thought I'd get my first check. And it gave me a little bit of confidence. And the next thing you know, I'm at Pickwick, and I've never been to Pickwick before in my life. And I'm a Tennessee River guy, but I was a Gunnersville Chickamauga guy. I didn't have to go far because we had such good fishing. So first time I went to Pickwick, I won, and that gave me money to continue on. And it's just been a blessing ever since. But it's all been – all the glory goes to God. He's been good to us. We have a lot of faith is what I can tell you.
I mentioned earlier, actually, you've got Chickamauga coming up on the schedule to be the beginning of May, and you know, based on your jersey and boat, you're probably going to be one of the favorites there. But yeah, Grand and Cherokee are actually in between, sandwiched in between there with Lake Seminole. But has it been hard this year not to look ahead at the Seminole and Chickamauga stops with the history and the success that you've had there? And did you see your success on Toho coming kind of beforehand, or was it just something that you were like, holy cow, I'm doing well in this tournament here?
My goal at Seminole or at Toho going in, honest to goodness, was just a top 60. I want to make the Forestwood Cup really bad, and I felt like I was on enough fish to get a check. And then once I realized I was going to get a check, then I was like, well, now it's time to go for the top 30. And once you realize you're in the top 30, well, I got a chance to do better than that. So then you start, your goals change as you go through. And I never really knew that I was going to win, to be honest with you. I was going to be happy. When I made the top 10, after that, it became a fun day. I mean, really and truly. But there's a lot of difference in the money between 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 1st, or even 2nd. So, I mean, it goes through your mind. But it really started playing hard on me at about 2 o'clock, whenever I knew that I felt like I could be a 6-pound fish away, and I had not had a kick or bite in 4 days. I mean, the biggest fish I weighed in was 5.5 pounds all week, so... And every day of practice, I had 1 7 to 9. I mean, it was, I just knew every cast could be the big fish I needed to win it. And by about 3:15, my wits was at end. I was a nervous wreck.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, Major League Fishing was there just a week before. And based on what we've talked with Joe Opiger, who's a media director at FLW, public information, you guys were available to watch that if you so pleased, or kind of digest any of that public information. Is that something that you did going into the Toho event, kind of keep an eye on what was going on the week before?
Honestly, I did not, because I was at Okeechobee fishing the coast event. And it, you know, the days that they were fishing, we were fishing. So I didn't get to see much of it. I tried to keep up with who did what and maybe how it was going. But I did not get to watch any of it, really. If it was another tournament that happens that way, absolutely, I'd watch it just to get your mind around kind of what's going on. But I still just went and done what I thought it was going to take to do, because I'd rather fish offshore to be shallow. And, again, it just... The first place I stopped, the first morning of practice, I caught a 5-pounder. And then I went to like two more of the places I marked and didn't catch nothing. And the third place I went to, it was just like lights out. And then the fourth place I went to, I caught them good. And I just, after that, I just said, this is what I'm doing. And I stuck to it until the last day of practice. Because the first 2 days of practice, we had cloudy, rainy, windy days, which was kind of like, you know, fell into the tournament for the last 2 days. So I just, on Tuesday, we had a sunny day. And I went up shallow and started looking. And I said, that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to fish offshore. And if I get a chance to go find a big one, that's what I'm going to do. I just stuck to my guns.
Nice. I want to know what your best five on Chickamauga is.
Well, I've had some real high 30s, maybe a 40 once, but I've got beat with 37, 38 pounds up there, too.
Wow.
But it's an incredible fish factory. You know, hats off to everybody. They've done a great job on that lake. I'm going to tell you this. In 2004, there used to be a Times Free Press tournament. And it was a big deal back then. There'd be 400 boats in it, maybe 450.
Wow.
And to win the tournament, I won it with 16-5, but I locked off of Chickamauga and went to Nickajack. That's how bad the lake was in 04. And look where we're at now.
It's crazy.
It's impressive. You know, you look at the winning weights. You had Terry Bolton, 91. You had 85. Chickamauga, we're talking about what that can kick out. We've seen what Grand has done in late March, early April before. Did you look at the schedule before the year and go, man, you're going to have to at least average 4 pounds of fish anywhere we go this year to have a shot to get a win?
I know. It's going to be crazy. I mean, when we seen the schedule, I got excited. I was just like, I just got to make sure I keep my head down and go, because this is the best chance for a really good year that I've ever going to have. I mean, this is as good a schedule as I could ask for. And hats off to FLW for picking great lakes and great times. They did a good job.
Just looking at your statistics and where you've won and how you've won it, I mean, are you kind of a cut from the Randy Haynes cloth where you make it happen out there, or it's not going to happen for the most part?
I've tried that approach, but I am traveling with some guys that tell me, you know, pick up the spinner rod and get your limit. It's about a payday, and it is about a payday, but I have been cut from that cloth. I would much rather catch big fish my way as to do anything, but I'm learning. I can tell you that. I am traveling with Brian Thrift this year. And
oh, wow.
Just listening and watching and talking. And it's been an experience, and we've only done it twice so far, but he's a good one to watch.
Yeah, it's working out. It's working out pretty well for both of you so far.
Yeah, where's the trophy at right now?
Right now, it's in my pickup truck in the back seat. And I hope nobody knocks the wind out here in a little while.
Oh,
they have all my fishing tackle, just don't take my trophy.
Wow. That's cool stuff. All right. Anything else, Matthew?
No, just congratulations. It was awesome to watch. And like I said, it's cool to hear you go back and listen to that pre-practice interview that Kyle Wood did. And at the time, I watched it, and I was like, yeah, you know, Buddy Gross, he's one. But you don't think, you go back, and then at the end of it, you say some stuff where it's like, oh yeah, he's really catching them. And I didn't really want to let on too much about what it was. But yeah. Then once the day five comes out, you're going to be able to put this whole thing together with the live that FLW will put out on YouTube, the pre-tournament interview and the day five post-game, and you'll get a really kind of start to finish look at how you got things done last week in Florida.
I'm curious, buddy, was there a moment on the final day that you realized, hey, I'm going to win this thing?
I knew I had a chance at about, and I knew I had a chance at 8:30. I had a limit at 8:30. My marshal asked me how much I had, and I was sitting back in a little bit. My family was in the car driving. I didn't want her to get all tore up and hear me say I already got 20 pounds. But I had 2 4-pounders in the boat before. You know, there were only 10 of us blasted off, and I think 7 of them went to the locks. And I could see the locks, and the rooster tails weren't even set down. I done had two 4-pounders in the boat. So
wow.
It started off great. It ended great. I mean, it's just an awesome deal. When Kyle and I went back yesterday, though, I let Kyle have the first cast, and, of course, he wanted the swim bait. And I told him, I said, be ready, Kyle, because I said, it's probably going to happen really quick because we get there at like 9:45. And, you know, that's kind of the tail end of my deal. So I said, be ready. Well, he threw out there, and he had a monster. But I seen the rod about jumped out of his hand. I was like, oh, my gosh, and he missed it. And I said, well, I got to throw. So I threw, and I set the hook, and it was the biggest fish I caught out of there the whole time. I didn't land it in the boat because I was going to let it get a pretty shot for the camera, and it got off, but it was 6, maybe 7.
Wow.
And I told Kylan what dinner. I said, it'll be my luck. We'll catch a giant right here. And they're not in the tournament. But it worked out. The place was awesome. I mean, that's the kind of spots you dream of. We fish those kind of places on Tennessee River all the time. And when you find one, that's what you get. There are like looking at a needle in a haystack. But when you find it, it's very well worth it.
Very cool. Well, congratulations, and thanks for coming on the show, man. And we're going to look for big things over the next couple of events on the FLW Tour from you.
Thank you for having me on the show. If you guys ever need anything, let us know.
All right. Good stuff, man. Take care. Be careful. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. There you have it. Buddy Gross. Sorry. I had to turn it down a little bit. I still don't have it dialed in, man. I'm working on it. We'll get it dialed in soon.
I think one of the things that was overlooked there that he kind of glossed over a little bit was the fact that he lost a 10-plus pounder and then watched a fellow competitor, albeit friend Jamie Horton, who, by the way, grew up with pet foxes, has had a wild cat in his boat at one point. He netted a bobcat and tried to put it in his live well going across. Great dude there. Mm-hmm. But watched a fellow competitor catch that 10-pounder, did not have a fish over 5.5 the entire tournament, was still able to win by 4 pounds. And at the time that this happened, on day two when Jamie Horton caught that 10, or day one when he saw it get caught, was 10 pounds out of the lead. I mean, I'm not saying I'm like the most stalwart angler like out there like Stone, but that would have spun me out. And I think that would have spun a lot of guys out to see that go down. You'd have just gone, wow, this just isn't my deal. I lose it. I watch someone catch it. Someone catches 31 pounds. But no, he comes back and wins in convincing fashion with, you know, Daryl Davis and John Cox right behind him. I mean, like he said, he didn't want to let his family on too much. But with those guys behind you and the lake that you're on, I don't think there's any lead that's safe to where he knew that he had won until the final scale said what it said.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I want to get to the question that was on the instant feedback about what television show did you watch growing up to get you in this game, Matthew?
Midwest Outdoors.
I remember that.
And In Fisherman, the voice of In Fisherman back in the day. And then Babe Winkleman and Jimmy Houston were the two. I'd never really a huge
Linder.
Oh yeah, the Linders and the Canada thing, and we now go to Lake of the Woods. That type, you know, remember that
oh,
voice?
Yeah.
Where we're back trolling spinners for walleye in frigid temperatures, bouncing it off of rocks in 74 degree water.
That's pretty good.
That was what got me. And my dad would have the VCR, that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
And we'd record it, and then I would label it on the side, and I'd watch them week in and week out. But Midwest Outdoors and In Fisherman, the two that that got me when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You know, I've mentioned this over the years on this show, and Clay in Arkansas threw his name out there. Orlando Wilson was iconic for me. He was the guy who wore the Atlanta Braves hat, and the way that he conducted himself in educating people that were watching this show, but at the same time he had this gift to entertain, and it wasn't like fluff or anything like that. It was just it was awesome, and that was really the show that got me into it. Now, I told the story about how I even caught a bass to begin with. I didn't even know what a bass was.
You're a trout fisherman, right?
Yeah, well, the first fishing I ever did was we took a can of corn and went to the trout farms out in California. Mm-hmm. And you'd put like two or three, niblets?
That's called a kernel, Mark.
Okay. On a hook and a bobber, and you'd throw it out there, and then you'd catch some trout. And then we did some ocean fishing and everything. But I didn't even know what a bass was until I came to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea. Went to a farm pond, and that's what really, really got me hooked. But from a television show standpoint, it was Orlando Wilson. He rocked. I mean, it was that whole TNN block, and so many of the young kids out there have no idea.
Was the Bassmasters in that block?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We would end tournaments on Sundays in time for us to get home so we could watch the TNN block. It was like Hank Parker, the Bassmasters, Orlando Wilson, and I think there was one other one. I can't remember, but it was just It was epic. It was, we lived for Sunday nights in that TNN outdoor block. It was funny. They actually have somewhere out on the web, obviously everything's out there, they have the old TNN logo that actually had a tagline on the TNN logo that talked about the outdoor block that they had.
Last night, it's funny that you bring this up. I watched a new fishing show for the first time because I have the My Outdoor TV. It's now on there. And I came across it, and it said The Hunt for Monster Bass. And I was like, oh, I want to watch that. I'm a big fan of Larry Dahlberg's, like the quest for monster fish and stuff like that. Well, it's with Ott.
Yeah.
Where have I been?
You didn't even know that was taking place?
Where have I been? It is like a cinematic masterpiece. It's like Ott in black and white. His face is like zoomed in. He's like, I made that cast. Yeah. And I knew. Twitch.
Oh, there we go. It was Roland Martin. Yeah. That was he was the other one on the outdoor block. Yeah. How could I forget that?
But I had no idea this thing existed. It is. I mean, it's a little dramatic, but I mean, Ott is a heck of an actor in this thing. He's like, I threw that prop bait out. Twitch.
It's really, really good.
The water boiled, and then it goes back to like the cinematic black, and then slow mo, and he's like, that's her.
Yeah. David in Wisconsin says, no Jimmy Houston love in Oklahoma. It was okay.
Yeah, I watched Jimmy Houston. I watched that too.
Yeah. It was when he lived on Lake Tenkiller. He hasn't lived on Lake Tenkiller for a while, but he did a number of shows on Tenkiller. And I told you the story. The first time I ever met Jimmy Houston was when? Do you remember?
Wasn't he upset at you?
Yeah. It was when I worked at UPS and they had a bunch of locators that got destroyed and delivered and they were all busted and
you
needed
had to take
them
to his house.
I had to go inspect the packaging and all that, and I was going to deny the claim, and dude, he went off on me. And that was my first meeting of Jimmy Houston. I didn't even really know who he was when I was doing that.
Babe Winkleman was the big one. And then 2 years ago, we were up at Mille Lacs, and Gene Gilliland, who's the conservation director for BAS now, longtime conservation director in Oklahoma for the Department of Wildlife or Fisheries, had taken his boat up there. And he's like, hey, I've got all these little pothole lakes. Let's go fish around. And we're fishing. We go to this one lake, and there's this boat out in the middle. And I said, it looks like there's a camera in that boat. And it's, who knows what they're filming? And then we hear, it's Babe Winkleman out there filming a show. There's three boats on the lake, us, Babe, and his camera boat, and they're filming a show on the lake. It was the coolest thing ever.
Wow.
It was just, I mean, there's literally 100 lakes around that area. And we picked the little pothole lake that Babe went out and filmed a show on.
This is funny. I totally forgot about this until we started talking about it. About 2 years ago, I fished the old man's tournament with Ed Barton, and it was on Lake Eufaula, and I was on my way
in Oklahoma.
I was on my way to Lake Eufaula on Interstate 40. It's 3:30 in the morning, and I see this truck pulling up behind me in a hurry. Right, I'm not pulling my boat because we're taking Ed's boat. Obviously, I'm just driving out there. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, this guy decides he's going to pass me, and I'm doing like 75. He must be doing 80, 85. And it's Jimmy Houston.
With his boat.
With his boat. A yellow truck, yellow boat, and just as fast as he could go to get by me. And then the very next exit, he gets off. So what do I decide to do? I need gas. So I pull over.
So you stalk Jimmy Houston?
I did not stalk him, all right? I had to get gas. I was planning on getting off at the very next exit. For some reason, I don't know why he passed me. He got off there. We were at Love's, which is a convenience store here in Oklahoma and across the country. He got gas. I pulled up right next to him, and he's sitting there pumping gas into his boat. And I actually asked, I said, hey, Jimmy. I said, can I ask you a question? Yeah. You know, and he's just, you know, wanted to talk away. I said, about 25 years ago. I said, do you remember this dude showing up at your place at Tenkiller that wanted to inspect a bunch of your electronics that got absolutely destroyed by UPS? And he just started laughing in the Jimmy laugh. Oh, yeah, I remember you. And he called me out. We sat there and probably talked for 2 or 3 minutes. And then, boom, he was gone. So he was obviously going somewhere, in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Fishing.
But yeah, he remembered. He remembered that whole situation. Story. So, you think he dyes his hair?
No, he's a natural blonde, Mark.
How old is he? Is he in his 70s?
Oh, he's a natural blonde. Who's older, Jimmy or Rick?
It's a good question.
If you had to have an endurance competition, who are you picking?
Klon.
A fishing endurance? You're picking Klon over
Jimmy?
Picking
Klon.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I'll go with Klon. He's got the Zen workout thing.
Yeah.
He's got his own karate instructor. I don't think that Jimmy's.
You know what is one
instructor.
Of his kids, and I can't remember which one, is really, really into golf.
Rick,
did you know that?
Or Jimmy?
Rick.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. He's really, really good too. I know he's been to the state tournament and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, I don't want to look ahead, but right now, who would be some of the favorites for Lanier?
Lanier?
Yeah.
That's not looking ahead. I mean, that starts on Thursday.
I know.
Mark.
I know.
It's Tuesday
today. I know. I know.
Obviously, you're talking about Georgia. You're going to have Micah Frazier, who's going to be a favorite. But you have to remember, I think that the anglers who came over from FLW are going to have a big benefit here because they've seen that lake. It's not like Lanier is a place that all these guys go to all the time, even though it's got great fish in it. So you're going to see a Scott Canterbury, a Carl Jochumsen looking to rebound. He had a 14th place finish the last time that the FLW Tour was there. Chris and Corey Johnson. Now Chris struggled. He finished in the 90s the last time the Tour was there. I'm hoping I'm getting all these stats right. You could go
You're
back
ballpark,
and check.
Man. Ballpark.
He was in the 90s the last time they were there. Another angler to look out for is going to be Shane LaHue. Really good with the
spotted
bass.
What about the big name guys? They did not really perform, with the exception, obviously, of Rick Klon.
Mark Menendez.
What about Steve Kennedy?
Yeah, well, Steve's like that.
Matt
That's
Heron.
How he always has been.
Matt Heron. I thought he would have caught him a lot better.
Yeah, I think that the St. John's River tricked a bunch of guys. I mean, if you did not think about it, there were a lot of guys who didn't catch him, too. If you were not in the right area or the right section of that fishery, it was really hard to get a bite. We saw a lot of guys who had big bags on days one or two that struggled on days three because of the wind. I mean, they made it look easy. But you're also just following the top five guys who happened to be in the right calm stretch where the fish stayed up. Yeah. It was not easy. I talked to several of the guys afterwards who talked about it. Even the Menendez said 7 to 10 bites a day. But I think you're going to see a mix of small swim baits, of drop shots there at Lanier. I think the Johnson brothers will be strong. The finesse guys, you know, maybe like a Paul Mueller could be a sneaky pick there.
Think about this. How much transition had to take place as far as what they had in the boat from Florida to Lanier?
A lot.
Just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you pull the guys and you pour a true serum in them, I think it'd be split about 50-50, the guys that, when it comes to back-to-back events.
Yeah, it's if you're on a roll, it's a great thing. If you're not on a roll, boy, you're hemorrhaging money and not getting things going, and it is over really quick.
Yeah, early back-to-backs,
well,
too.
Well, think about it. You get two early back-to-backs in a nine-event regular season, your season's halfway over, and it feels like it just started because you get a back-to-back. It, you know, the first one gets out of the way, the momentum rolls, you suck in the second one, then you get back. Just by the time you get things organized and get back in the groove, boom, you go again back to back. And now your season's halfway over and you're sitting. I mean, I know this for a fact. I've roomed with these guys is out on the road, and I've been around the guys who've had great years to where it's like, holy cow, they just can't not catch him. And then guys to where it's like, just stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
And there's no way to do it when you're fishing every single day.
Huh. All right, let's talk a little bit about Conroe. We mentioned it earlier in the show. 16-inch minimum, correct, at Conroe?
Excuse me. For the normal, everyday anglers.
Yeah.
But not for these anglers.
What do you mean?
Well, it's a 1 pound minimum this week.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to happen? Are we going to see a fish over 10 pounds?
It would not surprise me at all. It really wouldn't surprise me. Midway through day one, I mean, you're seeing it being pretty stingy. which is what a lot of the guys said. I guess the water's a little bit dirtier than it normally is. I'll actually be down there over the weekend, kind of getting the semifinal and final round action. Actually pretty familiar with Conroe after the Classic has been down there, and I fished a tournament down there where I've spent probably 20 days on that tiny-ass lake in Texas, and it could either be really good or it could just be frustrating.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot of big ones in there, but there's an inordinate amount of 15 and 7/8 inch fish, which is like money zone. It's like a 2.4 to 2.6, probably a little bit even heavier now that it's pre-spawn and not fall. So,
So any fish over 10 pounds?
Over 10? I mean, they're in there, but there might. It's a 50-50 mark. I think it's 50-50. It's definitely a possibility. Definitely a possibility. Brent Ayler exacting revenge right now after some unfortunate things. That was the other thing I wanted to bring up. I thought interesting that on the MLF website, they're putting their stats from FLW and Bass on there.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I mean, I do, because you want to show, you want to validate your anglers and talk about how good they, you know, they are historically speaking in their past tournament experiences, but it's just weird that, you know, like FLW doesn't have Bass or MLF stats. Bass doesn't have MLF or FLW stats, but MLF has FLW and Bass stats and MLF stats, but you can't differentiate them. Like, you just click on it and it says Jason Christie has 15 wins. Well, Rick Klund just won his 16th, 17th tournament.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just trying to figure this thing out, you're sitting there, well, 8 of those wins are where he beat everyone's brains in on Grand Lake and BFLs.
Yeah.
Klund's wins are all tour-level wins. So they're not differentiating between the BFLs or the tour wins.
Well, I think after this year, that'll go away, because they'll have some data. They'll have some statistics. The thing that I thought about is, why don't they throw out their Select and Cup stats?
Well, there's a lot of guys who don't have them. A lot.
But ones that do, why not put those out there rather than put Bass and FLW? I don't understand that. Anyway, it'll change. I think once you have more historical data, that will probably go away. You know, it's kind of like when you get traded in the NBA. Your stats follow you from a career standpoint, but you're
staying in the same league.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be like it would be, in this case, like going from like the G League to the NBA. Is
some of them.
It's a loose, but it's just a different league.
But no, it's like being in Oklahoma City and getting traded to the New York Knicks.
No, because your stats still stay.
But the stats for that particular team.
All your records are still there and everything.
That's in your career stats.
Right.
Not for your stats with the Knicks.
That's
what
I'm
saying.
Like, the Knicks, if you trade away a player that doesn't have the traded away player still leading the team in points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
All right. It's the same thing. So I think eventually over time that's going to change. Jake in Ohio and a number of other people. Yes, as long as his schedule will work, we're going to try and get Bradley Hallman in here next week to break down.
Doing the same thing Buddy's doing right
now. Yeah. Yeah, to break down.
Getting a little look at Seminole before it goes off.
Yeah, so just dependent upon his schedule, as soon as we can, we will have him live in studio to break down Toho.
Who you got this week?
On which one?
On the MLF since it started.
Man.
I know it's like kind of going on in the morning, but because they zero the weights twice, it doesn't really have any bearing on who you'd pick.
Who did I pick last time? I don't even remember who
picked.
I picked.
Hackney.
How'd he do?
He didn't win.
Did he make the cut?
He didn't win.
Okay. Wow. Honestly, I haven't even thought about it. I don't know, man. That's a cop out. I really don't know.
I'm going with Andy Morgan.
Is he in the B squad?
I don't even know which group he's in. I don't even know if he's fishing tomorrow, but I'm going with Andy Morgan.
Who else is fishing tomorrow? Can you tell me?
I think Andy Montgomery would be a good pick, too. With Andy Morgan.
Faircloth?
Yeah, that would be strong.
Yeah.
That'd be strong.
All right, we'll see. I really don't know. How about at Lanier?
At Lanier?
We can wait till tomorrow on that one.
I already know who my pick is at Lanier.
Who is it?
Brandon Cobb.
Okay.
Brandon Cobb's going to be my pick for over half of the events this year, Mark. I'm just letting you know.
Okay.
The dude is shockingly good. Go look up his stats. Type in Brandon Cobb, FLW. Hit enter, then click on his name, and then scroll over to where it says number of tournaments and top tens.
All right. I'll do that.
And then try to find someone who matches that. Not named Brian Thrift or Andy Morgan.
Okay. All right. I'll see if I can do that. All right, good show today. I want to thank Buddy Gross for taking time out to kind of break down a little bit about what went down with his win on Lake Tahoe. Tomorrow, Jeff Sprague on an off day. He's going to dial in and get his take on what's going down in the Conroe area on Lake Conroe after one day of the MLF BPT. And then hopefully we're going to be able to take some phone calls tomorrow, too. So that's kind of the plan. Next week, working on some cool stuff. Hopefully the week following tournaments, we obviously would like to get the winner on there. That's kind of the plan. And we'll go from there, Matthew.
Cool.
All right. Tomorrow, same time. Everybody be safe. We're out of here.